mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, since passage of the PACT Act a little over 2 years ago, the Department of Veterans Affairs has been conducting the largest outreach campaign in its history, bringing nearly 750,000 new enrollees under the VA umbrella of care. We'll take a closer look. Also this morning, ahead of tonight's WFIN Candidate Forum, a conversation with Republican hopeful Ty Matthews, clear frontrunner in the race about his campaign for the 83rd district seat in the Ohio House of Representatives. And we have details on the Alzheimer's Association's Echoes of Memory program coming up at the University of Findlay, exploring the journey of those with dementia. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, September 30th, 2024. You seen the images and the videos out of parts of the South? Recovery continues following Hurricane Helene. It is, especially like in the Carolinas, they got massive amounts of rain. It's almost like a post-apocalyptic world. And there's no power, no cell service. They're pretty much cut off from the outside world because roads are either washed out or impassable. Food is in short supply, gasoline. It's just really, really devastating in parts of the South following Helene. Closer to home, though, things are getting back to normal. The light's back on most places in central Ohio. Still some power outages in southern Ohio following the after effects of Helene that hit the Buckeye State. AEP Ohio initially reported thousands of customers without electricity across their service area, but the majority of the outages have been fixed. Still some in southern Ohio. Governor Mike DeWine was in Scioto County Saturday to survey extensive flooding there and to meet with local emergency management officials. So this was a monster storm. And from what I understand, the news reports, both Vice President Harris and former President Donald Trump say they're going to be visiting parts of the hurricane-affected areas over the next few days. And I get it. I understand. And on one level, yeah, you want those who would be potentially in charge of disaster recovery on this scale to be there and see the damage. But at the same time, there's such an entourage of people that come along with that. And, you know, the security measures, obviously, and everything else. That is the last thing that they need right now. You know what I mean? Is to have emergency services and police and all of that diverted for the purposes of a campaign visit is what it amounts to. But they're going to go, apparently. They're going to go. Certainly thoughts and prayers with all of those folks who continue to be impacted by the after effects of Helene. And there's another hurricane or two that are brewing in the Atlantic now. So hurricane season far from over. Did you go to Oktoberfest over the weekend downtown? Of course, because of the hurricane, we had a little bit of rain. So I think that might have kept some of the crowds down. We were there fairly early in the evening before the rain really hit. And I think a lot of people did. And of course, the Buckeyes played Saturday night. And so that probably kept some folks away as well. But all in all, I thought pretty well attended given the weather issues and so on. While we were there, lots of people. And it was an awful lot of fun. This I thought was kind of interesting in the aftermath of Oktoberfest. Story that I saw on the Newswire here this morning. The head brewmaster at the oldest brewery in the world has released a shocking statistic. Non-alcoholic beer now makes up 10% of their total volume. Non-alcoholic brew, 10% of the total volume at the oldest brewery in the world. Brewmaster Tobias Zolo of Wiehenstephan. Is that the brewery? I don't know. That's probably, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. But the head brewmaster says he himself enjoys an alcohol-free beer with lunch. You can't drink beer every day, unfortunately, he says. Even at Oktoberfest in Germany, where, I mean, now that's Oktoberfest. Even at Oktoberfest, non-alcoholic beer gaining in popularity. The very first alcohol-free beer garden, Die Knoll, recently opened in Munich. So it is really getting to be a big thing, I guess, this alcoholic beer, non-alcoholic beer. I don't know that there were any non-alcoholic brews at our Oktoberfest, but, I mean, there were other things other than beer. I don't know if there was any non-alcoholic beer there at our Oktoberfest. I didn't see any, but there were a lot of brews. Good time. So kudos to everybody who pulled that off over the weekend. Here's something to make note of among the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started as we head back to work for another week. A new analysis by Wallet Hub of the hardest working states in America. They took into account factors like the average work week hours that people work, the number of hours people work in a week, people with more than one job, and the amount of unused vacation time people have. And they came up with a list of the hardest working states. The number one hardest working state, North Dakota. Alaska is number two on the list. Just to give you a snippet of the statistics, in North Dakota, the employment rate is over 98%, and in Alaska, more than a quarter of employees have unused vacation time. And so they are number one and number two, not just because of those statistics, but those were just kind of a couple of the highlights. Nebraska, Wyoming, and South Dakota round out the top five of the hardest working states in America. Ohio, all the way down at 42nd. 42nd out of 50. So we're one of the least hardworking states in the U.S. But on the other hand, I mean, hard work is a virtue. But on the other hand, I mean, if you look at some of those metrics, number of people with more than one job, number of hours that we work during the week, unused vacation time. I mean, a lot of folks tell you that's not necessarily, those are not necessarily good things, right? You want to take your vacation time. You don't want to work too many hours that you have no life. And of course, people with more than one job usually have multiple jobs because they have to work multiple jobs just to make ends meet. So these are not necessarily good things. I guess it's all on how you look at it. But Ohio, all the way down at number 42, the least hardworking states, at the very bottom of the list, West Virginia, New York, and Michigan, all the way at the bottom of the list. So we may be 42nd, but we're harder working than the folks in Michigan. Well, there's that. We do have that. Just something to think about. Head back to work on this Monday morning. And a couple of other items here among the first things you need to know this morning. A follow-up. You remember the story about the lawsuit that was filed against Breyers Ice Cream because allegedly they falsely advertised that their Breyers Natural Vanilla Ice Cream had no actual vanilla in it. You remember, I seem to recall maybe this past summer, it was weeks or months ago that we were talking about this lawsuit. Somebody actually filed a class action suit against Breyers because they were advertising natural vanilla ice cream, but it had no natural vanilla in it. So they have reached a settlement, $9 million. Ice cream shoppers who bought the natural vanilla flavored ice cream between April of 2016 and August of 2024 could get up to $8 back. Whoa! $8! The court will pay consumers $1 per carton for up to 8 cartons purchased. To qualify, it says here, you have to submit proof of purchase. So, dig out those grocery store receipts from 2016 so you can prove that you bought the ice cream. You have those ice cream receipts from 2016. You can submit those along with your claim. There is a form you have to fill out. And again, you can file up to 8 claims, get $8 back. Seems like an awful lot of work for $8. But, hey, it's all about accountability. You know what I mean? It's all about accountability. And by the way, speaking of food flavors, move over pumpkin spice. We have a new flavor to try. Just in time for harvest season, Faygo Pop. The soda pop company, they're based in Detroit. Did you know that? Faygo is based in Detroit? I did not know that. But anyway, it says here they're based in Detroit. They have a new flavor to try. It is called Jolly Green Apple. The Detroit-based soft drink maker says the vivid green soda has a tart and tangy apple taste and is caffeine-free. Faygo introduced the drink with the social media message, move over pumpkin spice and get a sip of the new flavor of fall. So, Jolly Green Apple Faygo, now available on store shelves. You're welcome, America. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly cloudy today, a high in the mid-70s. Partly cloudy tonight, a low around 60. The Findlay Police Department says a bicyclist was injured when they were hit by a vehicle. It happened in the 3300 block of North Main Street on Saturday night. Police say the 20-year-old from Findlay was operating an electric bicycle northbound on North Main Street when he was hit from behind by the vehicle. The vehicle then fled from the scene. No description of the vehicle was provided. Police say the bicyclist was taken to Blanchard Valley Hospital for an apparent head injury. The crash remains under investigation. The Findlay-Hancock County Community Foundation Board of Trustees approved more than $72,000 in grants for mental health projects among 8 local organizations. Community Foundation President and CEO Brian Treese says the grants demonstrate Hancock County's commitment to coming together to support our friends, family, and neighbors in need of mental health care. And he says each of these grants will help improve their quality of life in that way. Among the organizations receiving the grant funding are the Family Resource Center, Findlay Family YMCA, and Welcome to a New Life. See the full list in the story on our website. Ohio wildlife officials are asking people to report any sightings of deer behaving abnormally.
Leaders with the Ohio Division of Wildlife say they're seeing a spike in cases of deer suffering from EHD, a disease typically caused by a type of fly bite. Officials say animals impacted could include deer looking disoriented or showing little or no fear of humans. Some deer might even show swelling in their heads or necks. You're asked to call 1-800-WILDLIFE if you see any sick deer.
WTOL 11's Kaylee Marentet reporting. The Hancock Park District has announced that it has acquired Cooper Pond, located on County Road 144, north of and adjacent to Oakwoods Nature Preserve. The property was donated by the Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company. Eventually, the Meadowlark Trail will be expanded through the Native Prairie and Wetland Restoration Area in Oakwoods Nature Preserve with a connection to Cooper Pond. Get more details in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Since the PACT Act was signed into law a little over 2 years ago, the Department of Veterans Affairs has been conducting the largest outreach campaign in its history, and that effort has resulted in nearly 740,000 additional veterans having enrolled in VA healthcare. Adam Farina is Assistant Secretary for the Office of Public and Intergovernmental Affairs in the Department of Veterans Affairs. And Mr. Farina, to what do you attribute that? Is it strictly the PACT Act that are bringing so many veterans in, or is there something else in addition to that that you can point to explain the success of these outreach efforts?
Absolutely. And first of all, thank you so much for having me. I think there are really two things to attribute this to. One, President Biden signed the PACT Act into law 2 years ago, and it was the biggest expansion of veteran benefits since the GI Bill. Mm-hmm. And when we did that, it expanded healthcare and benefits to millions of veterans nationwide. But it's one thing to make those veterans eligible. It's another thing entirely to get them in the door. And that's what this outreach effort is all about. Making sure that we reach veterans where they are in their lives and inform them about their new eligibility for VA and get them to come. So we've hosted thousands of events all across the country. We've been texting veterans for the very first time ever. We've been doing a nationwide advertising campaign, all with the goal of meeting veterans where they are, where they live, informing them about care and benefits, and getting them to come to VA. And as a result, we're delivering more health care and more benefits to more veterans than ever before.
It's interesting. The method of outreach has come into the 21st century. You mentioned with text messaging and things of that nature. Like you said, kind of meeting veterans where they are.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the first time in history VA has been able to identify the veterans who are eligible for VA healthcare, but who are not yet coming to us to get it. And that's who we're targeting. That's who we're texting for the most part. Same thing with disability compensation benefits, which are benefits that you get for healthcare conditions that followed you home from your service.
Yeah.
Those are the things that we're reaching out to veterans and texting them. And we've gotten a really good response. You know, another example of kind of fitting ourselves into veterans' lives rather than making them come to one of our hospitals to learn more.
You know, the message has long been that this is a benefit that comes along with service. Those who are eligible should avail themselves of that benefit. It seems that lately, especially, again, with the publicity surrounding the PACT Act, that message is getting through. So now the question is, how do you keep that positive momentum going moving forward?
I think, look, we're just going to keep our foot on the gas pedal through every possible avenue that we have. And I think one of the most exciting things that we've never done before in the history of VA is having these events that we're having all across the country. We've had thousands of events. Some of them have been in places like motorcycle rallies. Some of them have been in major sporting events and major sporting stadiums across the country. We've even been having barbecues all across America. And the goal of that is to be where veterans are, to put VA where veterans are and put VA into those veterans' lives. And look, we recently had a veteran who was brought to one of those events by his daughter. He's a Vietnam vet who previously wasn't eligible for VA healthcare, but became eligible under the PACT Act. And he came to one of those barbecues and he met with us and he learned that he was eligible for healthcare and he signed up that very day. 50 years after his service, he's now able to get care and he got it that same day. That's what this campaign is all about. That's what this outreach effort is all about. Reaching those heroes, those veterans, and bringing them to us. Because veterans who come to VA live healthier lives.
Now, as you are well aware, as many are well aware, there are a number of negative perceptions about VA. They have been over the years. One of the most familiar is the question of supply versus demand, that there is a greater demand of veterans who need care than providers to supply it. And I can hear some say, well, now here we're onboarding 750,000 new enrollees and counting. That's only going to exacerbate that problem. What is the response to that?
Well, one thing, as soon as the PACT Act was passed, we embarked on the biggest hiring effort we've ever had. And VA now has more healthcare providers than we've ever had before. We're up to about 450,000 people total, all of whom come to work every day with one goal, which is to serve vets. And second, I would just say to veterans, look, this is not your grandfather's VA. It's not your grandmother's VA. VA healthcare outperforms the private sector in availability and accessibility and affordability and wait time. But ultimately, the metric that matters most to us at VA is veteran trust. And we recently conducted a survey of 440,000 veterans, and they reported trusting VA at 92%. That's not a metric you would see in the private sector. It's not even something that would be measured in the private sector. And so, look, there are always ways in which we can do better, and we're always working to do better. But for veterans who have had bad experiences with VA in the past, or maybe just veterans who have never come to us before, we encourage you to give us a chance or give us another chance, because we're going to work to earn your trust every single day.
Now, you were referencing, and I want to go back and highlight some of this. We mentioned the PACT Act. You mentioned some of the other services that you provide. Kind of highlight some of those services that you provide to veterans.
Yeah. So first and foremost, there's healthcare. And as a result of the PACT Act, any veteran who served in Vietnam, in the Gulf War, in Iraq, Afghanistan, who deployed in support of the global war on terror, all are eligible for VA healthcare. In addition to that, there's monthly disability compensation benefits, which are, as I said earlier, veterans who have health conditions that followed them home from war that are a result of their service, they're able to get monthly payments from us. And VA massively expanded access to that under the PACT Act. But that's not it. There's also the GI Bill, which helps you go to school in an affordable way. There's VA Home Loan Program, which helps you buy a home with $0 down. And there's even memorial affairs, where we honor veterans with lasting resting places in national cemeteries across the country at the end of their lives. And so it doesn't really matter which door you come to VA. There is no wrong door. We want you to come to us for any of those services, and we'll make sure that you get all of the services that you've earned for your service to our country.
Such an important point that VA encompasses more than just healthcare. But on that point, I also want to point this out, because I know it has been a point of emphasis under the healthcare umbrella, is the expansion of and the really push to get more veterans, make them aware of and have them take advantage of mental health services.
Absolutely. You know, I think one of the great things about VA, and one of the reasons why VA is proven to have better health outcomes for veterans, is because so many of our clinicians are veterans and they treat veterans every day. And so they know the physical health conditions that veterans face, but also the mental health challenges that veterans face, whether that's post-traumatic stress or anything else. And we have a full suite of resources that we lead the nation on in helping veterans cope with those conditions, live with those conditions, and ultimately recover from those conditions. And we are here for you wherever it is. And we're laser focused on making sure you get the care you need when and where you need it in the moment you need it. And that's the case with physical health conditions. It's also the case with mental health conditions.
It is such an important message for veterans to hear. Adam Farina, again, is Assistant Secretary for the Office of Public and Intergovernmental Affairs in the Department of Veterans Affairs. Where do folks go to get more information and ultimately to get help?
Yeah, you can visit us at any one of our healthcare facilities across the country. You can come to one of our events, or most easily, you can visit us at va.gov or call us at 1-800-698-2411. We have folks available 24/7 to help you apply for the benefits that you've earned and deserve today. And we hope you'll do exactly that, because you've served our country and it's our job at VA to serve you.
Adam Farina, thanks very much for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
So later this evening, WFIN, along with the Findlay Hancock County Chamber of Commerce, will be hosting our final candidate forum of the election season ahead of the general election in November, featuring the two candidates vying to be the next representative of the 83rd District in the Ohio House. And last week, of course, we spoke with Sheila Caressel, who is the Democratic nominee. On the Republican side, Ty Matthews is the hopeful and joins us in the studio this morning. Ty, it is always good to see you. Thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Good morning, Chris. Thank you for having me.
So, first of all, for the vote, and I know we've talked about this before, for the benefit of those who haven't heard us talk about this, what made you decide to throw your hat in the ring, and why now?
Yeah, and just like to start and tell you a little bit about myself, right? Yeah. I'm a lifelong district resident. I grew up in Arlington. Mm-hmm. I'm a proud Arlington Red Devil. Graduated from there in 2013 and went on to Cedarville University, small Christian college, where I got my bachelor's degree, and just most recently got my master's degree from Liberty University, another Christian university. So faith is a huge part of my life, mm-hmm. you know, you drive around town, you see the logos, you know, the three stars that stands for God, country, and family. And those are my motivations. Those are my pillars. That's why I do what I do. Mm. And when you ask me, you know, why are you running? Well, I base it on those three foundations. I want to fight for those values that I think we share here in the community, those principles. And I want to be that voice in Columbus speaking for our community.
Mm-hmm. There were some folks who were a bit surprised that you threw your hat in the ring at this election, because Republicans already hold the 83rd district seat, and the current representative of the 83rd district, John Cross, was not term limited out. So there were some of those who were surprised that you challenged him for that seat in the primary. What do you think was the deciding factor that gave you the nomination?
Yeah, you know, like I said before, competition breeds excellence, right? The free market. I'm a free market loving Republican, and we ran both, I think, really strong campaigns. And at the end of the day, the voter came out and they chose who they thought would represent them best in Columbus.
And so in the weeks and months since the primary, what has the campaign in the general election been like?
Yeah, it's been great, you know, getting across the district, getting to know the voter, getting to know the interested groups, and seeing how I can really just develop even further, not just as a person, but a professional, and your next representative on how can I go to Columbus and be that voice? How can I work for you in Columbus? So it's been really awesome getting around the community, getting to meet a lot of awesome people and awesome groups. And I got to tell you, Chris, we're blessed here in the 83rd District with all the advocates we have for our community.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you are a native of Arlington, so very familiar with the Hancock County portion of the 83rd District. What about getting to know the voters in, I mean, obviously for us, that's the, you know, thing that we're most interested in, but obviously the 83rd District more than just Hancock County. Talk about that process of getting to know the people in Hardin and the northern part of Logan counties.
Yeah, so I've been spending a lot of my time, I would say, south of Hancock, you know, looking into Hardin County, a lot of time in Kenton and in Ada and around the lake. Diverse issues, really. You know, it's crazy amongst how, you know, how compact we are as a district when you look at Hancock, Hardin, and Logan, and you go to each county, and there's something different, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm really enjoying right now is getting to know those people, those issues, and seeing how we can develop plans, and not just talk, you know, not just listen, but we need some action, right? We need to move the needle on issues rather than just having these talking points, right?
Such as, I mean, what are you hearing from voters as you knock on doors and as you attend events and so on surround in the entire district? What are the key things that you are hearing from voters?
Yeah, I think by far it's inflation right now. You know, everyone's getting hit by inflation. It doesn't matter, you know, what your social class is, you're getting hit by inflation. And, you know, even across, you know, the district, it's becoming more and more security and protection, wondering where our community is heading in the future. A lot of that has national implications, right? You know, geopolitical implications. But yeah, by far it's inflation. You know, I was looking that up a little earlier, and I believe under Biden at one point it reached 9% an increase, right? So
yeah,
even today you're paying 75% more for eggs.
That's
impacting everyone. So the voter is concerned not just about their own pockets, but this community. And, you know, how are we going to address these issues together, but realizing there's not as much tax revenue out there right now. You know, the state may come up on a, you know, we may have to pull some, you know, cut some pennies here, you know, next budget cycle because of this inflation.
I'm sure that'll be one of the things that we talk about this evening later in the candidate forum this evening. But let me ask this: What are your key issues, your key parts of your platform? I mean, you mentioned that you hear about inflation from the voters, so. What are the key parts of your platform to deal with, not just that, but other issues that you see as the most important for voters in the district?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, at a state level, it's hard to deal with, you know, a nationwide inflation, right? But I've always been an advocate of we need to just cut the spending, right? We need to find ways where, you know, let's back up. What causes inflation? It's government spending. That's what causes inflation, you know, and we need to start having some difficult talks on what do we need to trim down to get this down, right? But to answer your question, what would I like to do? I look at economic development in our community. And I'm excited to soon announce, and maybe I can come back on the show, Chris, to talk about this a little more, is the Ohio Defense Initiative. Looking how we in the 83rd District can attract defense sector jobs, military sector jobs. You know, we have such a great network across the state. Why not Findlay? Why not Kenton? You know, and I've been working on that quite a bit, actually. You know, some of the meetings I've been having, you know, trying to bring businesses to our community that are focused on that, whether it's with the Navy, the Army. You know, I'm open to whatever and exploring that. And that's tied into the security. That's my next point on my platform is security. And not just, you know, I think a lot of things come to mind there, but the physical security, right? How are we funding police to have the proper equipment to address the issues they're facing today? Mm-hmm. And, you know, last, it's back to integrity. And I think the first time we talked here, Chris, last year, that's really near and dear to my heart. And it's not just a political talking point. Mm-hmm. I want to take that seriously and see how we together as a community, but also at the State House, can work together to get the people to trust government again. And I think there's many things we can do at the State House, but mm-hmm. you know, it starts right here in the community. You know, we talk about, we always point our finger above, you know, the problem is always above us. Here in our community, we need to really start working together and view each other as, you know, as Americans rather than Republican or Democrat, and really, really want to focus on that, not only during this campaign, but also when I get to Columbus.
So tonight's forum, what will your goal be for the forum this evening? Because this may be the last chance for some folks. Early voting begins next week. This may be the last chance to make that last first impression, I guess, for lack of a better term, on some voters. What do you hope comes out of the forum? What would be your goal for the forum this evening?
Yeah, tonight I would like to be as clear and concise as possible on the issues, right? No fluff. Let's draw the contrast where contrast needs to be drawn. But, you know, my main goal, Chris, is to hopefully show that politics doesn't have to be divisive, right? It doesn't have to be. Sure, there's going to be some disagreements tonight, you know, and I'm looking forward to showing those disagreements, right? Because I know there inherently are there, but
yeah,
showing that my opponent is not my enemy. At the end of the day, she's an American. I'm an American, and even though there are those disagreements, we can come together and try to move the needle forward on issues that we even disagree on.
Again, Republican candidate Ty Matthews is clearly the front runner in the race because you have the R beside your name, but not resting on your laurels based on that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, again, go back to the free market. I appreciate competition. You know, it breeds excellence. And I truly believe nothing is given, you have to earn it. So I'm out there working, and I will continue to work until November.
We will look forward to the candidate forum tonight. Again, it begins at 5 o'clock at 50 North. If you want to join us in person to see the candidates, you can also tune in on air, and we will stream the video on Facebook Live as well. Ty Matthews, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it. Look forward to it.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
We've all heard the old saying, friends don't let friends drive drunk, right? Well, we can expand on that. Friends who don't drive drunk shouldn't let friends who do drive drunk drive them home when they don't want to drive home drunk. That may be a little more convoluted than would fit on a bumper sticker, but that basically is the message, the lesson out of this story in Westchester County, New York, when police, a police cruiser pulled over a car driving erratically in Mount Kisco and noticed the smell of alcohol and an open beer can in the center console. Not good. The person behind the wheel was reportedly on his way to pick up his inebriated friend from a local bar. Problem is, he had been drinking as well. A friend called him and said, I'm drunk, can you drive me home? And apparently the friend didn't put two and two together and realized that he was drunk too. And he was on his way to pick up his inebriated pal. We commend the first guy for making the responsible decision not to get behind the wheel. His friend should have done the same, according to the official statement from the Westchester County Police Department. Needless to say, the unnamed designated drunken driver failed a sobriety test and was arrested. And I don't know if his friend ever got home from the bar. But, I mean, you know, kudos to the first guy for calling. But probably should have called someone else. Drive him home from the bar. Elsewhere in the broken news this morning, Derek Johnson is the owner of a garden supply store in Donaldson, Tennessee. And he was robbed the other day. It was a bit of a creepy scenario. The surveillance camera in his business caught a man wearing a clown mask attempting to steal a propane tank from the business. And he said he tells local news reporters, rather than approach the suspect, he spoke to him over the store's loudspeaker system and told him to take off. And the would-be robber was startled enough by that that he ran away. Mr. Johnson said he was just, you know, processing what had happened. He said the reason he didn't confront the would-be robber in person and use the loudspeaker system is quite simply because he's afraid of clowns. It's wearing a clown mask, and that threw him. He's afraid of clowns. So he improvised, and it worked. So he said his first thought was, are there more? Are there more? Is it just the one guy? Are there more? Well, good for him. Came up with a great way of scaring off the would-be robber. From the International File, the broken news this morning. Somewhere in China, I don't have all of the details. This was a report in The Sun, the British newspaper The Sun. An explosion of human sewage erupted on a road in China, leaving cars and pedestrians drenched in, yeah, raw sewage. Video obtained. There is video of this if you are so inclined. I'm not. I'd rather not see this. But they called it a poo-cano, and video shows shooting up nearly 33 feet in the air before landing on everything, and we mean everything, on or near the roadway. Apparently, the explosion was the result of a pressure test on some newly laid pipes. The pressure test obviously failed. I don't think this was what it was supposed to do. You could say that the pipes crapped out. Elsewhere in the broken news, the International File, in Taiwan, a 20-year-old man took his own mother to court after she threw away his comic book collection. How many of us have had something from our childhood that we treasure only to find out that our parents threw it away? Well, mom says her son's comic book collection had gotten damp and kind of moldy and musty, and so she decided to recycle the old comic books to free up space. However, when her 20-year-old son came home and learned that the comics were gone, he got so upset that he called police on his own mother. The local court fined mom 5,000 Taiwanese dollars, which amounts to about 160 bucks American, for property damage. He actually took his mom to court after she threw away his comic book collection. I don't know what he claimed it was worth, but he got 160 bucks out of it, I guess. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this is actually kind of cool. A college student in Oklahoma who bought five... He's a paleontology student. And so when a collection of dinosaur bones came up for sale, naturally, as a paleontology student, he was interested in these, so he bought for $5,000 basically a bag of old dinosaur bones. But he got more than what he bargained for, what he expected. Kyle Atkins Weltman is a PhD candidate. And when he received his dinosaur bones that he bought, he discovered a new species within the bones. He said he had purchased the bones thinking that he had bought an Oviraptorosaur, but realized something was off when the bones were smaller than what he expected. And so he did some research. He said, my heart skipped a beat because I never expected something like this to fall in my lap. And he has discovered in these bones a new species of dinosaur about the size of a chicken, a modern-day chicken. He has named the new dinosaur, let me see if I can get this right, Ionophoron infernalis. In Latin, it translates to Pharaoh's Dawn Chicken from Hell. A chicken from hell is what he has called it. And it is a brand new species, so he has a huge credit to his name as a PhD candidate in paleontology. That is actually pretty cool. Discovered a brand in just a random old bag of dinosaur bones. How about that? There you go. Pretty cool story. Today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. And with that, we now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
This is Ed Lance with OSU Extension. It's harvest season. Drivers will be sharing roads with combines and grain hauling vehicles. Please be alert, especially on roads with limited visibility. Watch out for equipment pulling in and out of fields. Drivers and farmers, let's work together this fall to keep our roads safe and accident-free.
This message from WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news, and the statistics that shape our lives. And here is an interesting statistic. A new survey finds that 32% of Americans have a tattoo. 32%, roughly one third of Americans have a tattoo. I was a bit surprised by that. I was thinking that that number would be much, much higher. It seems like everybody's getting tattoos these days, but only about a third of Americans have a tattoo. 22% have more than one. So, again, much lower number than what I thought it would be. And this is kind of interesting. According to an analysis of Google search data, the most popular tattoo, at least the most searched for tattoo design, what would you guess? Butterflies, of all things. Butterflies. Butterfly tattoos were the most searched for design. It says here 45% of people are looking for ink to immortalize, are looking to immortalize the butterfly on their skin. 45% of all of those folks who were searching for tattoos search for butterflies. And by the way, it is not just most popular tattoo design in this country. It is the most popular globally. There are 428,000 searches per month globally for butterfly tattoo designs. And the butterfly, of course, symbolic of rebirth or overcoming obstacles in life. So a very popular sentiment for those who are looking to get some ink. The second most common tattoo design is the rose. The rose, an average monthly search volume of just under 295,000 searches for rose designs. Coming in third place would be tribal tattoos. Dwayne The Rock Johnson has tattoos honoring his family's South Pacific lineage in his ink, that kind of thing. Although a lot of people will go with tribal tattoos just because they look cool. But some will, you know, have a family heritage connection. Right? Let's see here. Dragon tattoos symbolizing courage, strength, and protection are the fourth most popular design searched globally. Dragon tattoos. And in fifth place, flowers other than the rose. The rose itself is up there at number two. Flowers of other kinds collectively rank fifth as the most common design being searched for. So there you go. If you're thinking of getting a tattoo and you need some design ideas, you can gravitate toward those. Or if you want to do something unique, maybe consider something other than those designs. But 32% of Americans have a tattoo. 22% have more than one. So happening around town, the Alzheimer's Association has a program coming up next week at the University of Findlay's Alumni Memorial Union called Echoes of Memory, exploring the journey of those with dementia. And Pam Myers is with us on the line from the Alzheimer's Association. And Pam, thanks very much for taking the time. Talk a little bit about this this program. It really sounds like a fascinating exploration, because I think we've all wondered at one time or another what exactly is going on for those who have dementia who are going through this experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Good morning. Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me on the show today. I wanted just to share with you the importance of this program for all your listeners, because it's really going to take a person from, you know, suspecting there might be some memory issues, some forgetfulness, something going on with them, all the way through to, you know, we're making that kind of that transition in that late stage of dementia.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really helping and supporting our caregivers and our families, and maybe people who are thinking they may have some memory issues. They could come and learn about, you know, how to get a diagnosis and, you know, what are those things that they need to do from someone who's maybe making a transition. Maybe someone's been living with the disease for a while and with their caregiver at home, and maybe it's becoming too much for them. So what's the next step? So we really have some experts coming to talk and share about all the different points along the journey. And so we're really excited to share that with the Findlay and Hancock County communities.
Talk about some of those presentations, because there are a number of them, as you mentioned, from a number of experts in various subfields of this, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, absolutely. Dr. Lim Kusa, who is a physician there in the Findlay area, is going to come and talk about diagnosis. And now that we have some available treatments for the disease, which we haven't had before, so going to talk a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
People always have questions about medications. So we really felt it was important to have an expert come, a pharmacist, who, and we are so blessed to have a geriatric pharmacist come. And so he's going to talk about the different medications that are used to treat symptoms and just the different ways that the medications may interact and how you engage in those conversations with your doctor. We also have the University of Findlay Occupational Therapy Department is helping us with this program. So they're going to talk about things at home and the things to look for, how to make activities and things to do with your person. And then, you know, for maybe later in that journey when you might need hospice, we have our folks from hospice there to talk about things. And then we're just going to talk about all things Alzheimer's and dementia. So looking at warning signs, getting a diagnosis, and how we offer resources and support along the journey.
This is maybe one of the most frightening diagnoses, I think, for a lot of people. Would it be fair to say that part of what you're hoping to do here is remove some of the fear associated with an Alzheimer's diagnosis, and fear both from the standpoint of the family of a loved one and for an individual themselves, to be, that fear of going through this based on everything that we've heard about what this journey is like?
Yeah, Chris, that's a great question and a great point. And absolutely, you know, there is a lot of fear around this diagnosis. And a lot of times people don't want people to know. And if you yourself are experiencing some memory issues, some forgetfulness, some fogginess, just some of those things, it's really important to go to your healthcare provider and get checked out. But a lot of people, you're right, Chris, there's a lot of fear. You know, particularly we know that this disease does travel in families. So mm-hmm. if someone has a parent or a sibling or an aunt or uncle, you know, that has the disease, I think there's that fear as well. So just to come and learn, you know, education, knowledge is power.
Yeah.
So come and learn about the disease. Come and see what resources are available. And the fact now that more than ever before, there's actually hope because we have some available treatments for the disease. So it's a really great time to come and learn all about what you can do for yourself and learn as a caregiver.
We mentioned that there are presentations by a number of experts, mm-hmm. but then also there are booths set up, various vendors, various individuals that people can talk to and ask questions of one-on-one.
Absolutely, Chris. And they are there for resources and support and, you know, exploration, because we know that everyone's journey and every caregiver's journey is different, and so people may need different types of help at different times. So we hope to have a wide variety of opportunities for people to get resources. And we still have some spots open, and it's free for vendors to come. So, you know, we'd like welcome anyone else who's still, interested in coming to be there to reach out to the community.
So, and this is open to the community. It's open to all. And this is a growing concern. Obviously, this is something that a lot of people are going to be interested in. And the numbers are actually growing, are they not?
They sure are. We know that there are almost 7 million Americans living with Alzheimer's disease or other dementia, and 236,000 Ohioans. And Chris, we know that there are over 1,500 people just in Hancock County. Mm. So, and we are projecting that in 2025, which is just right around the corner,
right,
that we're going to see 250,000 Ohioans. Mm. And we know there's, you know, 1 to 3 to 5 people that are caring for those folks that are living with dementia.
Right.
And we also know that over 80% of those folks live in the community, live at home. So we want to provide that education and support and let people know about resources.
Yeah, so obviously wide-ranging impact here in the community. So let's kind of lay out the event. It is happening on the 10th, October 10th, which is next Wednesday, I believe. Thursday.
It's okay.
October 10th, it is at the University of Findlay Alumni Memorial Union, and it actually begins at 5 o'clock. Kind of take us through the evening here.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to open the vendor booths at 5 so people can come in, get signed in, get comfortable. We're going to serve dinner at 5:30. We're very excited to be able to offer that to the community. And we're going to start the presentations at 6. So from, 6 to roughly 7:30, we'll have the experts come up and share. And then the booths will be open until 8. So people will have a chance all through the evening, to access the vendors and talk with them. And all of the folks, we're all going to be there starting at 5 so people can, access and just ask questions and, whatever they need.
As you mentioned, you are serving dinner as part of this event. There is no cost, but you're asking folks to register so that you can kind of get a head count. How do they do that?
There's a couple ways. They can call directly to Mary Beth Torsell, or they can email her. So do you want me to share that contact information?
Sure, absolutely. Okay. Please do.
Yeah, so Mary Beth's direct phone number is 419-419-5858, and her email is mattorsell@alz.org.
Okay, very good. We've got also a link on our webpage for more information about this event and the contact information to register for it. It is next Thursday, October 10th, at the UF Alumni Memorial Union, beginning at 5 p.m. Go to goodmornings.net for more information, such important information for folks to know. And again, Pam Myers from the Alzheimer's Association with us this morning. It is called Echoes of Memory, Exploring the Alzheimer's Journey. Pam, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having us.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. And remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, that, of course, goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we'll get a recap of tonight's candidate forum. Plus, for anyone with a suspended driver's license, the Findlay Municipal Court has another event coming up to help resolve those issues, get you back on the road legally. We'll have details. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.